second take of the second edition of the New Look CDOT show. We'll talk with we'll have my conversation with Jesse Winker a little bit later. Right now I am C. Trent Rosecrans, the Cincinnati Enquirer, with my partner in covering the Reds. Is that how what do we call ourselves? I don't know.
Yeah, the beat writers, or you could call your partner in crime, but that might not be.
No crimes are committed. None here in Australia, whatever we are. Yeah. No crimes in this house. But with John Fay, and you know, we're talking a little bit about we're 3-4 days in the position players reported today. Say we're recording this Monday night, should be up Tuesday, the 23rd, 24th, I think. And you know, we've already had kind of two of the most noteworthy days, just kind of people talking. First with Joey Votto talking about the, well, he didn't want to use the word ignorant, but he used the word ignorant, statements by some, and then Matt Latos going off on his old organization. So it's one of those things. I mean, you can't really, do you remember anything this much?
No, not off the top of my head. It was interesting with Votto. We asked him the normal questions, and then at the end I said, are you aware of this debate that's been going on in Cincinnati? You know, Marty Brenneman kind of took a shot at him, said he's got to worry about more than on-base percentage, and Votto was aware of it, and he kind of fired back. I don't think that's unexpected at all. Joey Votto isn't going to all of a sudden say, everybody's right, I was wrong, I have to be more aggressive, I have to, you know, go outside the strike zone every once in a while. And the Reds actually gave us numbers that kind of bared out how effective he is when swinging at strikes and how ineffective he is when he doesn't swing at strikes. I think it was 359 swinging at strikes, 180.
One, yeah, something like around.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So he hits half as well. So I think his approach works. I think the thing you can say about Joey Votto, he hasn't been as effective since the injury, but I don't think his approach is flawed. I think he just didn't have the strength. He played through it the latter half of 2012, and then in 2013 he wasn't quite the same guy. If he can get that strength back and drive the ball, I think he can be a very effective, if not one of the better players or better hitters in the National League.
And as tiresome as this debate gets, the thing is he hasn't had that power, so he's found a different way to be effective. And I think that's the big part. That's what Joey Votto is saying. It's like, yes, and without saying my power isn't quite what it was, he has to find other ways to help. And I think that, at least in his mind, is what he is doing. And I, you know, his 13th season, it wasn't the MVP year of 10 or even the pre-injury of 12. But it was still, you know, he was still top five, top 10 of the MVP race. I mean, let's stop complaining about Joey Votto of 2013. 2013, Joey Votto doesn't have to make any apologies for his performance on the field.
Right. He pointed out in the stat, you can go, if you want to divorce yourself from all the stats, when Joey Votto was in the lineup for more than 111 games, the Reds won 90 games. 3 or 4 years and made the playoffs. And he was a very big, if not the biggest part of the offense in those years. So I think if he's healthy, he can get back to that. He's going to be a very effective player. And if he can get back to his 2012 level pre-injury, he's going to be one of the best players in the game.
Of course, that was kind of a ripple compared to the tide that we got today or late Sunday night when the Ken Rosenthal article with Matt Latos criticizing the Reds came out. And it was one of those things. We emailed Rob Butcher. Reds weren't going to comment last night, but said Brian Price will be happy to address it Monday morning. And Brian wasn't the only one to address it.
Right. Well, Jocketty asked if we want to talk to him.
Which happens how often?
You know, once a spring training, maybe, with no announcement or anything. But I thought in Brian's case and Walt's case, they were angry. I thought with the players, they were, Homer Bailey spoke about it, Devin Mesoraco, Marlon Byrd, who actually approached you to talk to you about it,
yeah.
Skip Schumacher. I think they knew what kind of guy Matt Latos is. Not to say he's a bad guy, but he's the kind of guy that will pop off and say things like that. And I don't think they were surprised. And I don't think they were particularly angry. I think the one thing that kind of stuck in everybody's craw was he took a shot at the training staff and the rehab staff. And these are people that, you know, readers and fans don't know, but they're around all the time. They're hardworking people. They're the earliest ones to the ballpark on the road and things like that. And a lot of players have a lot of experience with them. Homer Bailey, for example, and they all spoke highly of him. And I think that's where they really thought Matt stepped over the line.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing is, players, if you're going to say something about another player, that kind of rolls off their back. You know, Homer wasn't mad that Matt insinuated something about him.
Right.
He was really much more mad that Matt said that the training staff didn't do their jobs, and he went after people lower than a player on the totem pole. And if you can go above on the totem pole or equal, but when you go below, that rubbed a lot of guys really, really wrong.
Well, and I think the other side of it was that Matt spoke like he was rushed back from this knee injury. Well, of course, we went back and looked at the circumstance. It wasn't the knee that kept him out. It was his elbow that kept him out. And at the time, he was complaining that they were making him make another rehab start. He came out and said that. And the other side of it is, if he was rushed back, he was very effective. He went 6 innings, gave up 2 hits and no runs in his first start back. So I think it was a little revisionist history on his part. I think he's holding something against the Reds because they traded him or there's some ill feelings there. He lost an arbitration case. And he's the kind of guy that will take it out on someone. And he did, and I think in this case, wrongly.
Well, then I'll play a little bit of what Bronson Arroyo had to say.
You know, I think they had a bad year because they just didn't have any offense, which has been a lot of the story over there. So I mean, the pitching staff did pretty good, but you know, when you have a bunch of guys who are in their mid-20s and they're the kings of the hill, a lot of times things can go awry a little bit because you don't have somebody to really just kind of lean on. Mm-hmm. And when he said Scott Rolen was that guy, even though Scott wasn't performing to his highest level at the time, it doesn't really matter. It's still somebody who, like, we have a problem, let's ask Scott's opinion. Because if he bounces something off of us, maybe we get nothing out of it, but this is the one guy we know that we might get something out of. And I was, you know, had become that dude for them. So, you know, I take it, it was a compliment, you know, it was a compliment, but you know, by no means, I don't think Cincinnati Reds probably wouldn't have been any better of a team with me in the rotation last year than they were with what they had, because the guys dominated, yeah. You know.
Were you surprised he was critical, like the training staff and some of that other stuff they were saying?
No, not really. I mean, you know, Matt speaks his mind. Yeah, Matt speaks his mind, and Matt's also a guy who, depending on the day you catch him, you get completely different answers, because if he's agitated by something, he's going to let you know how he's feeling at the time, and that doesn't always encompass how he feels every single day.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, sometimes we say things, you know, he can be a very impulsive guy in a way, and that's part of what makes him who he is, you know, because he's, you know, he's explosive. He's, and physically he's explosive. He's got great stuff out on the mound, you know what I mean? But one bad call in the game and he let you know physically, right, which tells you that if you come to him in a bad state of mind in front of his locker and ask him certain questions, he might give you an answer that's not the best for the ball club or maybe exactly what he wanted to say when he calms down.
And then here's Walt Jocketty.
Well, the first part that I saw was all I saw until the article came out. We just saw the pinnacle part. And, you know, we talked about whether we should respond to it or not. We decided not to, and because we just didn't want to get into, you know, back and forth with, it would have gone into a back and forth with the national writer that we didn't want to necessarily engage in. So, and I told Rob yesterday that I was sure it would come up in the morning meeting today, and we'll address it then with you guys. So, well, first of all, you know,
you know, we feel very strongly that we have one of the best medical staffs in baseball, from Doc Kremchek all the way down through our trainers, physical therapists, into our minor league rehabs and so forth. And we follow very strict protocols on after surgeries, rehabbing and so forth with a physical therapist. And we treat everyone the same and make sure that they're ready to go. We don't rush anybody. We make sure that, in fact, if anything, I've always had a philosophy, and that if a guy says he's ready, you wait an extra day or two just to make sure. And we've always kind of followed that protocol. So, but then when I read the rest of it and saw some of the other comments he made, I even got more upset. So it's just because it's number one, it's something that is not true. You know, there might have been a couple of things that were exaggerated, in fact, more than a couple. But it's just something that there's no reason to go there. Yeah. So, and we're spending a lot of time today talking about it.
All right. So, you know, that's kind of, we heard from the guys, and I think it's one of those things that'll have a couple shelf life and then it'll move on. But I found the Marlon Byrd maybe the most interesting, because I was in the clubhouse and I was talking to another player and we were just chit-chatting. This wasn't for a whatever. And that topic was being discussed. And Marlon Byrd hears about it and looks at me and says, "You want a quote?" How often does that happen to you, John?
It does, it rarely happens, or if ever, but I think it speaks to something that's very important in baseball in the mind of players. What happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse. And the things that Matt said about guys' behavior during the game and stuff, no one's privy to that but the players. And Marlon Byrd said to you, "I'm not going to say anything about the Phillies." There was a lot of talk about problems in the Phillies clubhouse, but he's moved on, and I'm sure he would have opinions on it or whatever, but guys generally do not talk about other players, and it's kind of an unwritten rule, and it's written, and there's the Milwaukee clubhouse has the big sign, "What goes on here stays here," you know? So I think that was the other thing that kind of miffed players, is that, and I thought he took some gratuitous shots at Homer Bailey, talked about him roping clubbies, and, you know, Homer is a rodeo guy who can rope and that kind of thing. But the thing about Homer is he's an all-business guy. He is not going to screw around. When he's doing rehab, he's doing it. He's very diligent about it. He's very regimented about how he prepares and stuff. So I thought that was just a – I don't know if it was a jealous shot because Homer got the money or whatever, but it was – I thought that was – way over the line.
Yeah, and the other thing is this may not be the best course of action for Matt when he's looking for a team next year. He's going to be a free agent, and there will be teams and general managers who remember this.
Yeah, I think so. I think if Matt Latos gets back to what he was in 2013, he's going to get money. He's a very good pitcher, and that cannot be discounted. But the thing that's stands out is he's a very good pitcher. He's 27 years old, I think, and he's been traded twice. So Matt has to look at himself and say, you know, why are teams giving up on me as effective as I've been? And I do think some teams will shy away because of that. But I think he'll get his money eventually. I think the bigger question is, can he stay healthy? Because he had the knee, he had the elbow, and then he had the other elbow things last year. But I think in the end he'll probably get his money, but there's going to be some teams that were definitely turned off by that.
Yeah, and yeah, the bottom line is he won't be starving anytime soon.
Right.
It's just one of those things that you may limit one or two teams from there, and but somebody will take a shot, and they should, because this guy is still a very good pitcher, very young. What's interesting is he we talked to some of the people in Miami, and he said he was taking a break from talking to the media, which is you know, I think Matt probably realized he did some things that he shouldn't have, and it's probably not a bad step for him.
Right. You got to learn. You got to learn from your mistakes, and I think it was a mistake on his part. There's a lot of ways to handle things like that, and I think the part about the training staff, when it turns out that it wasn't factual, that the knee never really held him back, and who knows what went on behind closed doors, but it just made him look bad, and you know, I think it's unfortunate, and I think that's what the Reds were looking at. It created an issue that wasn't really an issue, and they weren't real happy about it.
Good news is I didn't have to talk about Joey Votto's approach today. It changed a little bit.
Yeah, that's a subject for another. That'll be a continued subject. That's the kind of argument where you're on one side or another and you just don't see. I'm on the side that his approach is fine and I can't see their point and they can't see my point. You got to agree to disagree. But like I said, I think if Joey Votto is healthy, he's going to be a very effective player.
Changing completely topics. Here, I'm going to play my conversation with Jesse Winker here in a bit. And I hope you enjoy this because I really had a fun time talking to Jesse, and Jesse had a good time. Jesse Winker is the Reds' top hitting prospect. And I think one of the things people are so high on him is just kind of his attitude. He's a very upbeat kid. He's, you know, it's funny because he's compared so often to Jay Bruce, and there are so many similarities there, and most of them are very favorable comparisons. Both were high school kids taken in the first round. Both were Dayton and looked 12 at one point and have kind of grown up, and both have very nice left-handed swings. Jay has more power. Jesse probably has a higher contract rate. Jay's a right fielder who's a very, very good defensive right fielder. And Jesse Winker's a guy who's playing left field. And I think I've talked to a lot of scouts. You know, the one knock on him is he's had a knock on his defense. But I talked to some scouts who said he's going to be fine in left field. How much have you talked to Jesse? I know I have a lot.
I've talked to him a bit. I don't know him very well. He does strike me a lot like Jay Bruce. Very nice kid, mature beyond his years. The thing that I've heard from other people, I haven't seen him play at all, really, but people compare him to Sean Casey a little bit. Very good contact guy for a fairly powerful guy, and has that opposite field power, can drive the ball to left field with authority. So, you know, I think it's kind of tough to be in his position, because in these days, everybody knows about these guys before they get there, and there's almost built-in pressure on him. But I think he can handle it, and I think he's an interesting guy. I think everybody's going to be looking at him all year. He had a tremendous first half of last year, then was in an auto accident, hurt his wrist a little bit. He had been struggling at AA before that, but you know, he'll probably start at AA, and if he takes off, he'll move to AAA, and I think he'll if everything goes right, he'll be here in September for a September call-up. So I think he's a guy that people are excited about.
Yeah, and with good reason. He's also quite affable, something that's been used to describe both Jay Bruce. And then you think about Sean Casey, who's probably at the highest echelon of, I'd say, 80-grade affability.
Yeah, they're just good guys and good teammates. And, you know, it's weird. I wrote about Jay today, and there's a lot of people that act like Jay was never any good. He was, you know, he was the best hitting right fielder in the National League in 2013 and 2012 and 2013. He's 11th on the Reds' all-time home run list, and he'll turn 28 3 days after opening day. So Jay, as much as he gets knocked, and he had a horrible year last year, first to admit it, but this guy can be really good again. And I think the comparison is fair with him and Winker. Same kind of thing. I think Jay was the number one prospect in all of baseball, so people might tend to forget that. But I think Winker can really be a force. He has two big steps. It's a big step. First, he has to be successful in AA, then he has to be successful in AAA. And then the biggest step of all is getting to the majors. So, you know, everybody likes the kid, and everybody thinks he will be a good player. He's going to be a guy to watch this year.
And I have a pretty good feeling you'll really like the kid after these 25 minutes.
Because I didn't turn them on. Now.
Hello.
Perfect. All right. Perfect. The microphones are on.
Microphones on. Freestyle Friday. Let's go.
Yeah. You know, you just got back from, like, my dream as a kid. The Rawlings guy was here, and you got to go look at gloves.
Yes.
That's the perk of a big leaguer.
For sure. That was definitely new for me right there.
You don't get that as much in the minor?
Well, you do, but I kind of have to go through my agency. My agency customizes. They already customized me one sweet glove, but that was, going out there and getting to do it myself, that was pretty cool. I mean, I'm pretty sure in the minor leagues you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
But right there, go out and, just like that was really
try
cool.
Try them on.
Try them on. Know exactly what you want.
So. Are you a gear freak?
You know what? I'm a bat guy, big time bat and batting glove guy. I do like my gloves, but I don't really get flashy gloves. I just get black, made with like white piping. That's just what I did. But, with my bats and my batting gloves, and I'm a big, big shoe guy.
Okay.
Big Jordan fan.
Well, I knew there was the wager last year with Billy.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So we bet, and I think it's going to carry over to this year because I did get hurt. So his home runs to my stolen bases, whoever has more. That's the other guys to get him a pair of Jordans, whatever Jordans they want. Hopefully I don't lose that because there are some expensive Jays out there. So, that'd be a pretty big dent into my wallet. But we'll see. Hopefully I can win this year and take home the crown.
Because he won last year, or did you guys tie?
I think we tied, but I'm gonna spark it up again this spring. Yeah, it was 6-6. So I'm gonna spark it up again this spring. So we'll see what happens.
Gotta get the legs in shape.
Spent all winter preparing for this, so.
can you get double digits?
I think I can. I think that's a reasonable goal. I'm not 60 or 70 like Billy, but, I think I could, maybe hit 10 or 15. That'd be a nice goal for me one day.
That's the funny thing. It's like it's almost like guys you went to school with when you come up through the minors.
Right.
Billy's a guy you've played with forever. You guys come to spring. It's just kind of it's almost like a baseball team's almost like your school class, isn't it?
Right. It's kind of like, it's like an extended family kind of deal, and there's a lot of guys that I play with in the minor leagues these last years, when they're coming up and they're going to go to their big league camps, it's just going to be cool. It's just kind of like a reunion. So, it's always cool hanging around with Billy. Today in BP, I was just kind of picking his brain and seeing what he does. And he's a great guy, great teammate. So I'm looking forward to spend some time up here with him.
What does it mean to be in big league camp? What's the difference when you're in big league camp versus minor league camp?
It's a huge honor. I'm just very, very thankful and blessed to be here. And it's a great opportunity for me to stage myself on the big league level, so I can't wait to get it started. But there's a lot for me to learn, and I'm just here. I'm going to ask questions. There's a lot of great veterans on this club, so I'm just going to, pick their brains and just learn from them.
What was it like when you got that call? I mean, you had to be expecting it. You had to have any plans. You weren't planning any vacations for the middle of February.
Absolutely not. Was not planning any mid-February vacations. But, it was a very big deal for me. And not just me, it was a big deal for my whole family. And it just kind of shows, the hard work. Not just me, I'd be lying to you if I told you that I've done this by myself. I come from a great mom, great dad, two great brothers, and they've just supported me through this whole process. So when I did get the call, they were all kind of with me, and I told them. I got off the phone. I was like, I just got my official invite to big league camp. We just kind of had a nice little family celebration, so it was great. But like I said, I'm very thankful for them, and they've been there every step of the way for me.
Well, they're baseball families, and you have a baseball family.
Yeah, they
Go through and explain, because you're born in Buffalo, and when did you guys move to Florida?
Born in Niagara Falls, New York, yeah. Basically, yeah. I just say Buffalo because, big Bills fan. I moved down when I was 7 to Orlando, Florida. We lived in Dr. Phillips first, and we've always been a huge baseball family. It goes back to Cayuga Little League in Niagara Falls, so it's kind of funny. My best memories as a kid were at a baseball field. I was on a travel ball team from the time I was 9 till all throughout high school, and that's just what I remember doing. I remember going to my oldest brother's games and my middle brother's games, and that's what I did. If I wasn't playing, I was behind the fence of their fields playing tennis, baseball with the local kids. So we are a baseball family. We grew up with a cage in our backyard, and that's just what we did. Some families are, everyone's different, and that was just our thing. And
you had the cage in the backyard, and now you're Dad owns the...
Yeah, he has this, it's literally called The Warehouse. It's right in Orlando, Florida, and very cool. I did some hitting there, and then I did some hitting over at some local high schools by my house, just to get on the field too. And then, you know, we kind of go all over Orlando and hitting cages. And but, you know, at the end of the day, the backyard's my favorite spot, and you know, we just kind of flip the lights on there and go out no matter what. So it's pretty cool.
Your dad can bring it.
He can't, you know, he doesn't throw it with as much pepper as he used to. He still thinks he has it. He doesn't, you know, I'm just going to let him know that right now. It was cool because, like, you just heard Pena say he throws a money BP, and he really does. So, and he can put it in any spot. So I've got the hit off that my whole life. So he deserves a ton of the credit.
So, you know, I think you're like me like this. It's like from when you were young, it was all baseball, and there's fall baseball, and there's winter baseball, and there's, you know, summer baseball. Do you remember time before baseball? I mean, was that just ingrained that your family, you're one of what, four?
One of three. Youngest of three.
And your little two brothers play baseball too. Mm-hmm. So is it just something that it's always been there for you?
Well, we used to play hockey back when I was younger. And I also remember skating, you know, Niagara Falls, New York. My middle brother was the best hockey player out of us three. He was a stud. But, you know, when you move to Florida, that whole hockey gig kind of gets wiped out. Before baseball, I mean, to be honest with you, I was at the same time, you know, I still had summer break. I was still a kid, you know. I remember watching games with my family in the family room of our house, and going outside and throwing up and acting like I was Derek Jeter, acting like I was Jim Edmonds, Ken Griffey Jr. You know, those are the guys I wanted to be. You know, even as I was in the high school stage, you know, watching Jay, you know, that was really cool for me. And you know, now I get to be alongside them in the locker room. That's pretty cool, too. But that's just what I did, and that's what my family did, too, you know. I remember going from practice, and, you know, I look at my dad, like, you want to go hit? And he was like, yeah, you know. And it was just, even my mom would come out and throw to me every once in a while when I was younger. So, you know, it's just what we did, and, you know, it really paid off. And it was, looking back on it, it's awesome.
It wasn't a pressure thing. It was just that's what you did.
That's all. That's what I did. You know, I remember ever since I was a little kid, I'd throw up a tennis ball, hit it over the house, run to the backyard, throw it up, and hit it over to the front of the house. That's just, you know, I just lived baseball. And, you know, there's not, to me, there wasn't a better thing to do.
So did you play any other sports growing up? I mean, besides hockey, but like...
Played a little hockey. Tried football for a year.
What were you?
I was linebacker and safety, and it wasn't for me. I think part of the fact was, I think we were 0-8. We just got absolutely squashed by everybody. I think I was in seventh grade. You know, it just wasn't for me.
So 12, 13-ish?
Yeah, we just got absolutely destroyed by these other teams. We were a smaller team, and I like tackling people, but you know, I remember one time at practice, I just made a tackle, and I kind of got a little banged up. I was like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. You know, when you're realizing that in seventh, eighth grade, it's going to shut it down.
Well, and also, and you're like, I like baseball.
Yeah. Right, exactly. You know, and I was like, man, like, I really want to be a baseball player. You know, I'm not going to be a football player.
When did that become something that you thought was possible?
Well, it was always a dream of mine since I was a kid, of course.
Right, mine too.
Right, absolutely. I played in a tournament my freshman year, and I was facing a kid who was regarded as one of the pitchers that was going to go high in the draft. And I had a really good game. I hit a double off him, and then I hit a homer later in the game off of another kid going to like a big time D1 school. And at that point, I realized, you know, okay, I'm competing with these guys. You know, I really wanted to go for it. You know, and like I told you about my family, they've always pushed me for it. Ever since I was a little kid, they never said no to any dream I had. You know, if it was being a major leaguer, they were all in for it. You know, if my middle brother wanted to be anything, they were all in for that. You know, not just for me, but for my brother. So, and now that my other brothers are kind of, you know, not playing anymore, they're in the support system as well. They've always been, but you know, it's just really cool that you got all those people building you up and pushing you. So it's you know, makes it easy for me.
Well, you're the youngest, so you're mom's favorite.
I'm not going to say I'm the favorite, but, you know.
At least your mom's favorite. Yeah, maybe not dad's.
Maybe not my dad's, but yeah. I mean, maybe my mom's. I don't know. My middle brother, Ryan, he's kind of, you know, he's a really good, he's the man. So I think if there's anyone who's a favorite in our family, it'd be my brother, Ryan. But that's okay with me.
Yeah, well, the baby is always mom's favorite. I say this as a baby.
Absolutely.
Myself.
You know,
and my wife is one of three girls, and she always says that, you know, the youngest one is spoiled, and my sister tells me the same thing, and we're right.
Right, looking back on it, yeah, I could agree with that. You know, I had my little ways when I was younger than him, you know, because two older brothers, you know, I'd kind of get bullied every once in a while. So, you know, you have to stick up for yourself every once in a while, you know. You know, and when you're 12 and your brothers are 14 and 16, you know, your punches don't hurt them like theirs hurt you. So, you know.
Well, and both of them played in the minors, right?
No, my middle brother played. He played at UNF. It's a D1 school in Jacksonville. He played a little bit, and he stopped playing because he has Crohn's disease.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's kind of been battling that since his freshman sophomore year of high school. So he's had a really rough go of it. Yeah. So, but my oldest brother played minor league ball for the Dodgers, and then he retired about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think we're going on 2 years. So, but he's a great baseball mind. So I hope he could get a job back in baseball. I think he wants to do that. So, you know, I'm looking forward to him getting back into the game because he could be a really good coach for people.
I mean, you remember when he got to be a professional baseball player?
Absolutely. I remember his draft day just like I remember mine. He was picked in the 28th round. He was a senior sign out of Mercer, small little college. And
Macon,
he went
Georgia.
Yep, Macon, Georgia. There you go. And he went through. He had a heck of a go at it. He got hurt. He was the thing people don't know about my brothers. He always could hit, but he was a stud. And he broke his kneecap in high school. Mm. Right. So that kind of held him back. And he was he had a lot of nice D1 offers, like SEC, ACC offers. Right. And when you break your kneecap, that's kind of a devastating injury. And he also tore basically everything in his knee. So he bounced back from that. Got to play his senior year, got a nice scholarship to Mercer. You know, now he has his master's degree, and he's working his tail off, doing a heck of a job. So I'm proud of him. And like I told you, he's a great baseball mind, and I hope he could get back in the game.
Well, in college baseball is so tough because they have those limited scholarships, and
right.
You know, if a guy is hurt, it's like, well, we can't
right.
do this. I mean, and so
nothing against the schools, you know, the guy breaks his kneecap
right.
and tears his ligaments in his knee, you know, that's kind of a career-ending injury. But to see him bounce back from that, you know, you want to talk about hard work. Just to see him bounce back from that, and to see my middle brother, everything he's gone through in his past, you know, what has it been? 4 years of college, 3 years of high school, you know, 7 years battling Crohn's. It's been, you know, for me, it's just – it's kind of helped mold me, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I watch those guys. I watch them, and I watch how they fight through their injuries and my middle brother's disease. It's kind of, you know, it makes me realize how blessed I am. You know, so it's just cool. But like I told you, just we kind of all support each other. And if you got to meet them and sit down with them, they tell you all about it.
Well, and you're. I forgot where I was going with this. That's a terrible interview. This is great. It's on tape.
No worries.
I was looking up your brother Joseph made the Midwest League.
Yep, he was an all-star.
He was an all-star Midwest League all-star?
Yeah.
So both you...
He was the year before me. And then he actually, what made him retire, he broke his foot the next year.
God.
Yeah, he's stepping on the bag the wrong way. You know, I couldn't believe it either. But, you know, right after he broke his foot, he got a... You know, like I think he had some pins or some screws put in it. He came back from that, and you know his drive wasn't there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so for me, you know, he made the decision, and I'm sure it was tough on him. You know, because he loves baseball just as much as anybody. But you know, he made a career choice that was best for him, and he's killing it right now, to be honest with you. So
that's great.
He's doing a great job. So I'm, you know, very proud of him and the decision he made.
So it's always one of those things where it's like, oh, here are the Winker boys, and it's like, oh, you're another Winker. Like it'd be like you go through Little League.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's another Winker.
Yeah, exactly. Let me interject and say that I'm proud of both of my brothers. You know, I just don't want to give it all to Joey.
No.
My middle brother too. You know, he's fighting a tough fight right now. So I just wanted to make sure I gave him the appreciated love because. You know, that's a curveball sometimes you can't hit, to put it in the baseball terms. But, you know, I feel bad for him. But, you know, every day he's a tough kid. So, you know, feel for him. But, yeah, the Winker boys. Wherever you see one, the other two are there no matter what. And I knew my whole life I had the two best people protecting me. So, you know, very thankful for them. And, exactly, at the Little League. I remember my oldest brother would play a game. I'd be playing football somewhere. My middle brother Ryan would be there, either there with me or playing some other game somewhere. So we were always rolling around, having a good time. You know, just playing some sport, doing something, causing some little havoc as an 11, 12-year-old kid could do.
Did, you know, and then what about your draft day? I mean, you go was it second round, right?
It was first supplementary.
First supplementary. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to shortchange you.
No, not at all. I'm just thinking about it because, you know, it was just so cool. You know, that's one of my dreams coming true, but this is what I've told everybody. I've always wanted to play professional baseball, so I knew that this was my chance, this was my opportunity, and this was my first stepping stone. So it's kind of funny. I'm pretty sure it went like this. Drafted Monday, graduated Tuesday, signed either Wednesday or Thursday, and flew out Saturday to start. You know, I came to Arizona for those.
No.
I was ready. You know, I told my parents at the beginning of my senior year, I said, I'm ready for this. And ever since then, they looked at me and they said, all right, let's go.
They had to love you. That was the easiest negotiations ever.
I was ready to go play. And I came to Arizona for those 3 days, and then I went to Billings, Montana, and started up. And it's, you know, it's been amazing. Every day, I love it. You know, I'm playing baseball. It's better than that.
Yeah. What was it, you know, you come in, and that's 12 that you're drafted, and you come in. In 13, you come here, and you got to play a little bit, and you see the major leagues. What's it like going from, you know, you're less than a year out of high school. Like, most kids are in their, you know, just figuring out their freshman year at college. Then you go, and you're like, wow, there's Joey Votto. There's Jay Bruce.
Right, yeah, you know. It was really cool, and you know, the second I met Jay, he's helped me every day. You know, if I have a question, I ask him, I text him, and he answers it. You know, he's been a big help for me, and you know, I can't wait till he gets out here just to talk some baseball with him and learn from him, pick his brain. But it was just, you know, those are the guys. You know, like I was telling you, when I was in high school, I'd watch Votto and I watched Jay. I'd be like, man, these are two of the best left-handed hitters in the game. Like, that's what eventually I want to strive to be, and now I get to learn from him on top of that. Like, that's, you know, what beats that?
It's, you hear that comparison to Jay all the time, and you guys are different players,
right?
But that is, there's still these things. I mean, you think of it, like, I think of your personalities as very similar. You know, you both have these beautiful left-handed swings, and why are left-handed swings better?
They just are. I'm going to ask you, who has the best swing in baseball? Who do you think?
Right now?
Right now.
Current. See, I, because of my age, I judge everything against juniors.
Okay, I mean, that's by far, okay.
Junior, Will Clark, I mean, George Brett, that's my
lefty,
age.
Exactly, you know, that, those guys are, you know, you go back to, Tino had a nice swing for the Yanks. You know, nowadays you got Cano. There's plenty of, like, it's just, I don't know, just something about a lefty swing.
Aesthetically, it just,
you know, it's just smoother. It's just smooth. It has, you know, natural loft. It just looks prettier. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some righties with great swings too.
Bullshit.
You know, but like, I agree with you. There's, you know, the lefties just have the smoother swing.
It's just something about, and yours is right there. I mean, do you watch on tape?
I appreciate
just be
that.
Like,
yeah, I, you know, it's something. It's I guess it's just something I've always done. You know, it's just the natural lefty swing in me. You know, not trying to do too much with the ball and just, you know, trying to hit it where it's pitched. I guess it just leads you into having a nice, smooth swing.
It always seems like left-hander, I always like low and in.
Oh.
And it seems like all lefties, like, just low and in, that's just the natural.
Naturally, you're just going
to. But right-handers don't, you never hear a right-hander talking about a ball low and in.
Yeah.
That they drool of. It always seems like they like that high ball.
Yeah, I've always noticed that too. Righties hit the high ball. But yeah, you throw a low and in any lefty, it's definitely going to get hit hard.
Well, some of us will swing at it hard. There's a difference between hitting it hard and swinging it hard.
You're going to go for it no matter what, so that's funny you mentioned that. Low and in for sure.
Because it's just right.
It's just right in the wheelhouse.
And it's,
you know, I've seen some lefties not like it, which is okay, but eventually they like the low ball.
But they might be one of those weird ones that throw right and bat left.
Right.
They're imposters.
Yeah, they throw right, bat left. I'm trying to think of anybody I know that does that.
Well, my all-time favorite player, George Brett, did that. But
George Brett did do that. You're right.
But they're kind of imposters.
Usually, like, if you see a guy throw righty, it's switch.
Yeah.
You know, like Billy. I'm trying to think of a guy I know that throws right.
There's a lot. I'm trying to remember.
Shortstops. Oh, Brad Miller does that for the Mariners. Yeah. I just had to think shortstops. I mean,
there are very few that do the other way. Ludwig did the other way.
Ludwig. Lamar does the other way.
Lamar does the other way.
Yeah.
You're killing your natural advantage.
Yeah. Lefty. You know, I couldn't imagine.
All the writers left-handed. Me, Faye, Hal, Sheldon, all left-handed.
No kidding.
Not one of us could play a lick, apparently. Actually, no. Hal played in college, so I'll give him that.
Nice.
You know, I played through high school, and it's just different level.
But yeah, every one in my family hit lefty.
Really? Even the right-handed guys?
Yeah, Ryan was the only one who was right-handed, but he hit lefty. He was a pitcher, though. He ended up being a pitcher. Joey was lefty. My dad hit lefty. My dad thought he could switch hit, but he was more lefty. I was lefty. I think he wanted us all to be lefties.
I was talking to Manny yesterday, Para. There's degrees of left-handedness. You know, some guys can do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And then there's people, I can't do anything with my right hand. I mean, it is, are you...
I cannot. My right hand is basically non-existent. It's like
for catching.
Yeah, that's all it does is catch baseballs. I'm trying to think of it. I kick with my right foot.
I do too.
Yeah, but I think that's.
I think it's good balance.
I think it's a balance thing there. Right hand, like yeah. This year I was in a splint, so it wasn't even there. Like I was fine. You know.
Didn't even notice. Yeah, you don't do anything with
whatever.
It.
I don't even. I hold the steering wheel with my left hand. What else? Yeah, nothing with the right hand. Nothing. It unlocks my phone, you know, that new thumbprint. That's about it. That's it.
You did have that injury. I mean, it was funny. I remember I talked to you. You had the car accident and hurt your wrist. But you stayed around the team.
I did.
You could have gone home. I mean,
could have gone home.
Nobody would have begrudged you in July to say the last month and a half of the season, why should you be on buses around the Southern League?
Right. You know, for me, you know, going home and seeing my family, I know they're always going to be there. I wanted to learn. There was a lot for me to learn in Double A. And I thank Delino and all the coaches, Facero and Pelias, they taught me a lot. All my teammates, I would ask them questions. I would watch. You know, like I told you this earlier, I would sit on the bench, and I would eat sunflower seeds, and I'd watch the pitcher, and I'd try to pick up on everything he was doing. I'd try to pick up on if he was wiggling his foot on a curveball, if he was gripping it early, if he was tipping anything, if he'd grab his hat before he threw anything that he could give me. And I'd learn how to watch pitchers. And you know, it's kind of funny. It was a whole different angle of watching the game. Usually, I watch it from left field in the batter's box. I've never done it on the bench before like this for that long of a time. And I learned so much, and just from sitting there and watching, that you know, when it was time for me to go to the fall league, and I was completely healthy, that I was like, let's go. You know, I'm ready to everything I've learned and everything that I've been doing. I'm ready to implement all of this right now.
When was it first at bat or second at bat of fall league?
Second AB was a homer. First one was a double. So, you know, and that was a great start. So, I was chomping at the bit to get out there because I knew I was going there. And I just wanted to show everybody that I was healthy. I wanted to prove to everybody that I was healthy.
And you won the batting title.
I did.
And I remember reading, I forget where it was. I mean, it might have been ESPN or something. Do you start reading about yourself now because you hear, like, this Jesse Winker, this guy, somebody said, this guy's going to win a batting title in the big leagues?
You know, I personally don't try to read about myself. I just try to come here and get better every day, you know.
But I'm sure your mom does and calls and says.
Absolutely. You know, my mom does. She does read it. You know, she tries her best not to. But, you know, she's my mom. And they're
right.
They're
she's proud.
Exactly.
She should be proud.
Exactly. You know, so there's nothing wrong. But, you know, I try to not read about it because, you know, you're never good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you think you are. You're somewhere in the middle. You know, that was something that was told to me early in my career. And I was like, hey, you know, that's the truth. So, like, during the year, I don't really tweet much. I don't log on my Twitter. I save that for the off season. I just worry about playing and getting better. You know, I think, you know, it's my job for these next 7-8 months is to, you know, play hard, have fun, and get better. And then, you know, whatever team I'm with, just help them win games.
Last thing, and this will just be kind of a silly question. What's your favorite baseball sound?
Favorite baseball sound? Hitting up when you square up a ball perfectly.
Can you tell... by the sound, like even if not even you, if you're walking back there and you hear it and you go,
yes, for sure, every time. Like there's some guys that when they hit it, it just sounds different, and then there's some guys that you know, when you're playing and it happens in the game, you just automatically start running back because you know it's going.
Who sounds different?
Bruce, for sure. I heard a couple of his beep, heard a couple of his BPs last year. They were impressive, you know, the sound.
Well, and then when we were in Minnesota last year, batting practice for...
Yeah, Gallo and Bryant have some different sounds off their bats. Baez from the Cubs,
yeah.
He hit some balls hard.
Saw him hit one off Chapman last year.
Yeah.
It went straight up, and it still went to the fence straight up.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of who else I know. There's a good one, because I was talking about this with somebody back home. Ricky Weeks.
Yeah?
Yeah. I saw him hit. He makes some loud noises with the lumber, so.
Yeah, I remember that the first year that Aroldis was here in 10, Weeks took him over the batter's eye here at Goodyear, and it went.
Yeah, and I mean, all the guys we were mentioning, you know, they're big, strong dudes, so, you know, when they hit it, no doubt about that, so. You know, but it's cool. Like I told you, you just know, like, especially in game when it happens, you're just like, whoa, you know, like that was loud. You know, I'm sure the pitchers don't appreciate that, but you know, as a hitter, that's all you want to do is make loud noises.
that's the one thing I remember, 99 All-Star game in Boston. I went to that. I was real young. It's like the first big event I covered. And I remember being, and it was a group with Barry Bonds, Mike Piazza.
Jeez.
Sammy Sosa and I think it was McGuire and Sean Casey.
Were any baseballs found on the field?
It was crazy, but then the thing is, of all those guys, Piazza's sounded different.
No kidding.
It was, again, you can't really describe it, you just know.
It's just
different.
Different, yeah, I mean.
You almost feel it.
And you know it when you're sitting there, because the comparison, especially at that time, the other four guys he was hitting with, like if he's making a different noise, you can definitely tell the difference. So, but yeah, and another one is Jason Giambi. When I was younger, I noticed that he was with the Yankees down in Tampa, and I went to a couple spring training games with my dad and my brother, and it was so cool. We went for BP, and he was crushing some balls. So, awesome. Wind was blowing out one day though, but I'm sure that didn't really affect them too much. No. Sure, they'd go out anyway.
Well, Jesse, again, I want to say thank you. I really appreciate those. That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it. We will see you in Cincinnati this year. I have no doubt about it.
Appreciate that. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, hope you enjoyed. We'll be back next week with another guest. I haven't figured that out yet. I'm getting really bad at this, but at one point we will. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed it.